Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. It's Wednesday. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. It's Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Tay, Eric Taylor, and yes, it is a fantastic Wednesday. Very excited. NFL, Super Bowl, NBA, everything's going on. And you want to join us? Please join us. We appreciate it. Give us a call at 718-664-9098. You can hit us up. We got to read an email today. We'll definitely, we love when you get the emails to us. But you can hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Also, the Twitter and the Facebook, you know, click on, like us, follow us. We appreciate it. And also, you can check out our website, rayandtaytoday.com. And that's RAEANDTAY today. Ray, what are we talking about today, man?
Well, if you don't know, the Super Bowl's on Sunday. So we got a lot to talk about. But our big Super Bowl show will be Friday, and we'll be giving out our Ray and Tay Awards for the NFL season. So tune in on Friday for that. But today we'll do our normal segment, Breaking News. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on in the NBA. We have potentially a big trade that might shake up the Western Conference. We got a little college basketball going on. We've got a little bit of an NFL kind of coaching okey-doke where we've got a coach that thought he was a defensive coordinator and now looks like he's not going to be the defensive coordinator. So we'll go through that. We'll give you a quick Super Bowl talk, some Super Bowl preview. Again, our big show will be Friday where we'll get into the Super Bowl. Then our segment is back. If you didn't know, today was Hump Day, a.k.a. Wednesday, which is Where You At Wednesday on Ray and Tay Today. So we're going to go through an ex-superstar running back who was a Super Bowl MVP. You scratch your head on that for a little bit. And then we'll end the show going around the association. We'll talk NBA talk. We'll talk about what's happening in the NBA. Looks like the Lakers are doing a little bit better. We've got
three in a row.
Yeah, we've got some good matchups coming out. So got a lot to get into. So let's get into it. It's hump day.
Okay.
Let's get them over
well,
the
listen,
hump day.
Before we get into the trade, man, I want to get into the best weekend. We just talked about the Pro Bowl. Well, you know, we also got the NBA All-Star Weekend coming up in February. It's going to be exciting. We've got the future game, the second years versus the rookies. So in the second years, we've got a nice little squad here. We got Kyrie Irving playing, Kenneth Faried out of Denver, Brandon Knight, Kawhi Leonard, Chandler Parsons, who's really stepping it up. Our man, Klay Thompson, who dropped 32, I think, the other night. Tristan Thompson from the young Clippers. And Nikola Vucevic. And so they're going to have a nice roster. And our man, Kemba Walker. Can't forget Kemba from Charlotte. So that's a nice little sophomore team. And they're going to bang heads, Ray, up against the rookies. My pick for Rookie of the Year, Damian Lillard. We got Bradley Beal, Anthony Davis, who's looking really nice. Harrison Barnes over at G State is playing good. Andre Drummond, the young Detroit guy. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, so he'll play against his teammate, so that should be, you know, kind of interesting. The Charlotte
That's
guy.
That's always interesting, right? Are they going to guard each other? Are they going to guard Kemba? Going to guard?
And then we got the Russian assassin, Alexei Shev.
Yep.
I like him. And then Dion Waiters, who's going up against his teammate, Kyrie Irving. And then last but not least, another teammate. The Cleveland Cavs got a lot of young guys. They got Tyler Zeller. So three Cavs in this game. You know,
how do you
Sellinger
think
was
about
left
the
off the list. Yeah,
think
well,
the
you
coaches.
Know what's so sad,
got
though?
Barkley and Shaq.
Well, that's going to be great. But I feel bad that Sellinger, who's been playing really well for the Celtics, didn't make it. Jimmy Butler's been playing good. Terrence Ross didn't make it, and neither did Rubio. So that's kind of interesting to omit those guys when you're only picking nine guys. They could have, you know, picked one more, like Rubio and then Sellinger, and that would have been 10 apiece. But, hey, it is what it is.
The only good thing about that is that you'll see a lot of nine guys, right? So it's not like, let's say Sullinger gets picked for the team and he'll be on the, you know, the rookie squad and he only plays 5 minutes, 5, 6, 7 minutes. I'd rather, I don't have a problem with not, because a normal NBA game in the flow, really you only go 8 or 9 deep anyway. So I actually don't mind only 9. And you know what this tells us? This tells us there's a lot of talented young players in the NBA. I mean, none of these players
really. Well, the league's
really
in good place. They're definitely in a good place.
And the league's in good place. The interesting thing is nobody really is a superstar. I mean, with the exception, of course, of Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie.
But other than that, your boy Damian Lillard might be. So Damian Lillard, Kyrie
and Anthony
Irving,
Davis.
Maybe Anthony Davis, right? Those are three
ahead
stars. The rest are just solid, right now, solid players. My man Klay Thompson, who I told you was going
to
be.
Yeah, he's headed to the superstar, though, man. That guy, whew. So come on, tell me what's up about this trade, man. Cause, wait a minute. Before you get to the trade, guess what? Congrats. Brooke Lopez was named to the All-Star team.
Oh, breaking
to replace
news.
Rondo.
Wow,
that's
so
good.
A center for a guard. Okay.
Yeah, kind of strange, but they do already have Kyrie and Holiday. But you know what I like? They didn't just go guard and go with D. Will. They said, no, Lopez is actually having the best season of the guys that didn't make it. So that's fair, right?
And even vis-a-vis his teammate, he's having a better season.
Right,
so if you wanted to put a net on the team with the third best record in, or now the fourth best record in the conference, you put Brook Lopez on. Now, the thing is, the East is carrying four centers, so the East is huge.
Well,
even
Garnett,
though Kevin
you can
really
say Garnett's a power forward, even though he'll start at center. And
he'll
then you got Noah, Chandler, and Lopez. So, all right, so tell me about this trade. I guess they're still trying to work it out, but it looks like it's almost official.
Yeah, we're scratching our head on this one. So,
I'm in shock.
Mark Stein of ESPN and a few other sources are reporting that Rudy Gay of the Memphis Grizzlies, part of arguably the best front court in the league, is going to go to Toronto in a three-way trade that's going to send the expiring contract and the assist master, Jose Calderon, and Ed Davis back from Toronto. And then Detroit might get involved and throw in a small forward, either Tayshaun Prince or Corey Maggette, also with expiring contracts.
Right. And what would Detroit get?
So Detroit would get one of the two players, I would imagine. They would get, maybe they'd get Calderon. Like the Grizzlies would get Davis and Prince, and the Pistons might get Calderon because he's got a nice expiring contract. He's got like $11 million expiring contract or something like that. Although they're giving up an expiring contract in Tayshaun Prince or Corey Maggette. So
it's just a trade that doesn't need to be made. Can I tell you Michael Conley on Twitter? His statement, wow. And I think that sums it up. Memphis is, what, fourth in the Western Conference right now. To me, why do you break this up? They're having their best season. This is their best first half record ever for the Grizzlies. I just don't get it.
I don't get it. So that's thing, you know, item number one. But, B, they've been trying to move Rudy Gay. It's almost like they've had buyer's remorse. Ever since they signed him to that contract, it seems like they're trying to move him. So, you know, what happened? You guys signed him. Makes me think that you wanted him. You knew what you were getting into. And you've been trying to move him ever since. And,
we all thought last week when we had Jeff Zilgit on from USA Today, and we talked about it, and this was, you know, I guess after. But after they did the trade of Spates and the other guys to where'd they send them to? To Cleveland. And they got John
to get
John
under
Lohr.
The cap. They brought Lawyer back, and they sent four guys to get under the cap.
Well,
so
three guys and a pick. Three guys and a pick.
Yeah, we thought they could keep Gay and keep that front court together.
So this
and
is
my
really
thing
bizarre.
Is, Ed Davis
maybe it's
is
just
a
new ownership
player.
It's got to
what do you do
the
with the small
ownership.
Forward position? What do you do athletically, right? We talked about this off air. Let's say you get Ed Davis back. So that gives you a really nice 4-5 combination with Zebo, Gasol, and Ed Davis. But the problem is over the past 2 years, you've lost your two most athletic players. You lost O.J. Mayo and Rudy Gay. Now, you might say dollar for dollar, maybe they're not worth it, and maybe they're a little bit, you know, out of control, knuckleheads, whatever. But they're athletic, and they can guard, and they can get out on a break, and they can finish. So there are some upsides to their game that nobody else on the roster really fills.
Can even provide.
I don't get it.
So, we'll talk a little bit more when we get around the NBA, but that's just shocking, and you know, we'll see what's going on. Now, also, we got the Miami Heat sort of re-signed Birdman, Chris Anderson, and Vernardo, you know, to play with them for the rest of the season. And then Greg Oden is deciding between the Spurs, Cavs, and Heat, where he might potentially work out with and try to come and play for the rest of the season. Could be a factor, could be a total non-issue, right? So, I mean, we'll see what's that. But what's going on in the breaking news in the NFL, right? I know there was something with your cowboy guy.
Oh, my God. So 5 minutes, Dougie Fresh, you're on, has turned into 5 weeks, it seems like, for Rob Ryan. So Rob Ryan was let go by the Cowboys, which we both agreed shouldn't have happened. He was the scapegoat because Jerry Jones wanted to make some changes, and he was the only guy really that was senior enough where you could actually let him go and make
shock
a change.
Shock somebody.
Yeah, you could semi-shock, right, because you weren't going to do anything with Garrett, and obviously the GM and the owner is the same person in Jerry Jones. So now he goes to the Rams to his buddy Jeff Fisher, and everybody thought he'd be the defensive coordinator there. And now, a couple days later, they never actually signed him, and they never had a, you know, press conference or whatever, but now they're saying that he's not going to be the defensive coordinator for the Rams. So I guess he never formally got the job, so I guess he's never been, you know, he wasn't actually fired. But
the ink's been dry yet, Ray.
Yeah, so I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I thought
Well,
that
I wonder
was
a, where the what direction do you think the Rams might go? I don't know who's out there. Maybe they promote somebody from within. That will be interesting. And then for Rob Ryan, maybe does he wind up with the Saints? And does Spagnuolo go back to the Rams? Remember, he was a coach there for a year or two.
That's weird, right? To
that
go
would
be the
weird.
Head coach, come back and be the defensive coordinator.
Stranger things have happened.
That's true.
Stranger things have happened. Now, listen, this is interesting. I got to tell you this, and some more news in NFL, and we get to the college basketball stuff. But Greg Jennings, he put his house up for sale in Wisconsin. So
I think
that,
he knows
that could be it.
That, I think he knows that the Bucks are not going to
I guess
sign
for
him.
What money he wants, and they've got they're loaded with four different guys that they probably can't. Even though Driver will retire, you know, they still have Nelson and Cobb and these other guys. So, and then listen, a Jamarcus Russell sighting to maybe sign with the Jets. How perfect would that be? Would that almost be fitting?
Oh God!
And I hate to call somebody a clown, but right, sort of like a clownish team with almost a clownish player. It's like a perfect marriage.
I don't want him.
First of all,
Jamarcus Russell, it's questionable whether he should be in the NFL. But let's say he works, he drops the 30, 40 pounds that he needs to drop.
Oh, God bless him if he does what he needs to do, right?
No, absolutely. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Jamarcus Russell is a perfect fit for Al Davis, rest in peace. Al Davis's Raiders. The Raiders of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, right? A guy with a big arm who can get the ball downfield. Once again, we come back to the issue of the Jets don't have playmakers and the Jets don't have anybody that runs downfield. I mean, maybe Stephen Hill turns into this guy. But,
right.
Well, Jamarcus Russell, really?
Okay, so let's just say if he can get it going, right? He's better than anything they have if he's in shape. And he does have a cannon of an arm, and maybe they sign a receiver, and they have Santonio Holmes, Stephen Hill, another receiver, and Curley, and maybe Braylon Edwards. You know, maybe they wind up with something. You never know.
Look, other than Tebow being gone and Sanchez being not an NFL starter, although the Jets are on the hook for – you know, $17 million against the cap. I know that the Jets' QB situation is pretty dire. So maybe they're thinking that he's better than Greg McElroy, or at least the potential, what we saw coming out of LSU, is better than Greg McElroy, and the Jets are so desperate that they'll take a chance on anybody.
Yeah. Well, hey, whatever. So, listen, let me ask you this. Big game last night, SEC. Kentucky steps up. Noel has a block party. When they keep changing the stats of that, and he wound up with officially 12 blocks. But what I think about this game that's fascinating, I think that win at Ole Miss, which was a huge win, and you know, out of the last six times they played, Ole Miss had won like two of them. Do you think maybe this could have taken Kentucky off the bubble? It's a pretty big win on the road against a ranked team.
Well, the funny thing is Kentucky actually doesn't have many bad losses, but they didn't have any good wins either. So to win in Ole Miss, right, in Oxford, Mississippi, and
mm-hmm.
beat them number 16 ranked Ole Miss,
yeah,
that's a good win. That's a very
good
win.
That is a good one.
And this team is trending up. So I think ultimately they're good enough, especially with the expanded field.
Can you imagine them on an 8-9 bubble?
Tournament.
How deadly could they be on that 8-9 bubble?
Yeah.
Wow.
They'll probably, I mean, as of now, they'll probably be a 12. They were looking like a 12 seed, but now maybe they move up to a 10 seed, a 9 seed. You're right, though. You don't want to see them in the second round just because of their athletic ability. And these freshmen are so unpredictable. I mean,
I think they're going to start to gel and play better together. And then I look at the other side, right, NC State. Bad loss. They win one, they lose one, they win two, lose two, but kind of a bad loss. They're like about to fall out of the top 25. They lose at UVA. And give the Cavaliers credit, they're like in third place in ACC. They're playing some ball, the Virginia Cavaliers.
Yeah, where has that program been? But yeah, they're 5-2 in the ACC, 15-5 overall. Maybe this gets them some top 25 votes. But yeah, the disappointment, NC State. I mean, they beat Duke, and then since then, what are they, 1-3? They just
lost to Maryland, lost to Wake Forest.
Yeah, lost to Virginia.
And this is the team, remember, they were predicted to win ACC this year.
Absolutely.
You know,
so can they not handle success? I mean, they're all veterans, right? Howell and Leslie and Scott and Brown. I mean, they're all, it's not like these guys are freshmen. This is not Kentucky that can't handle their fame and fortune that's been you know, thrust upon them. But Lorenzo Brown is a nice guard, and obviously Wood can shoot, and Howell and C.J. Leslie can obviously bring it at the forward position. So I can't explain it. I don't know what's going on, except for maybe the fact that they just don't know how to be the play from ahead. You know, be the
right
dog that everybody's chasing.
So
what do
you think about the
game,
great Big Ten, the Big Ten matchup, Ohio
State that
with that nice
that
win.
Would be weird.
Did you hear
that weird stat from that game? There's your
you
boy Brusewitz.
That's my favorite
game.
Name. I got to go with Brusewitz in Wisconsin. That's my dude right now.
That's a nice name. That's a nice name. The problem is that they can't score right now. They're having serious trouble scoring. But here is the stat of the game. For a big team, and for a team that's got a guy by the name of Brusewitz, and also Bergeron, right? But just let's say Brusewitz, just let's say it a couple times, and Jimmy Jackson's kid, Trayvon Jackson, they went exactly 0-for-0 from the free throw line. They did not shoot
incredible.
A free throw. In 40 minutes of college ball, you didn't shoot a free throw. I don't understand how that happens.
You got to take it to the Baja.
Well, that's exactly right. And they were settling for jumpers, and so they shot 36% from the field. They shot 39% from the three, but they didn't get anything easy. Nothing came easy. It was all jumpers, and it was horrible because you look at a stat sheet, and just to put it in comparison, it's not like Ohio State killed them from the line, but Ohio State was 9-for-12 from the line. So that's 9, as my JV basketball coach said in high school, free throws. They're free. They're free. They're giving it to them. So it's just a matter of taking them. So, yeah, these guys really, I don't know, if you're Wisconsin, you're saying to yourself, wow, we've got a team that can compete in the Big Ten. We just can't score. And one of the ways to score is get to the free throw line. Get those easy baskets or those easy points.
Yeah, you know what? I'll say this. It's hard in a Big Ten to win on the road, and, you know, Minnesota had their win at home. But I think Wisconsin, they're going to have to break through and upset one of these teams, either on their home floor, whether they beat a Michigan or an Indiana or, you know, Ohio State. And they're going to have to win these some of these games out of Minnesota, out of Purdue, somewhere, out of beat a Michigan State. But the Big Ten, they're looking like they could get six or seven teams in, you know, if you
yeah,
put
well,
in Illinois
Ohio
and Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, Ohio State, on the other side of that, now, granted, Wisconsin plays good D. Ohio State only scored 58, and 25
yeah.
was from DeSean Thomas. So if you shut
well,
him down,
he's
you shut down
for
Ohio
player
State.
Of the year.
Yeah, they need A, he's in the running for player of the year for sure, leading the Big Ten in scoring. By the way, when are they going to change the name of that conference? They haven't been 10 teams since Penn State
listen,
joined the conference.
Listen, this upsets Ray, people. It upsets both of us, but it really upsets Ray more than it does me. But
right,
listen,
and
they're
when
gonna
Maryland
get it
and Rutgers come, they're the Big 14.
I'm just upset Maryland's going there, but that's a whole other story. But you know what? Listen, let's keep it moving, and let's get into what we're going to talk about Friday, what the world is talking about. We had a media day yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, in the NFL. Some controversy. We'll talk about that, but also we'll get into, you know, starting to break down this game a little bit. Number one, on the interesting side, Randy Moss. He said something that could be blasphemous to the football gods, that he, you know, is the GOAT, that he's better than Jerry Rice. He's the best of all time. Look, Randy is definitely in the top five, could be number two. But he's not. He's no Jerry Rice. And I think we all know that. I just think it's – you got to also have that confidence in yourself. So you can't knock him for that. But Jerry Rice never took two and a half, maybe three seasons off. Jerry Rice never took plays off. Jerry Rice never, you know, disappeared. And Jerry Rice went across the middle, slants, and deep. Randy Moss mainly just bombs. So to me, you know, it's a non-issue in that sense.
Yeah,
so
Randy Moss may be the most physically gifted until Megatron came around, because Megatron
right.
is Randy Moss, but add, you know, 25 pounds.
Yeah,
you know,
basically.
So Randy Moss may have the best physical tools, but there's no way in terms of lifetime achievement that he's Jerry Rice. And Jerry Rice did it for so many years, and he's got those three Super Bowl wins, and he just did it consistently. And there's just no doubt about it that at best, like you said, at best, Randy Moss is second. But it just hurts me that a guy with that much talent and that much skill can take the better part of two and a half, three seasons off. You know, when his last season when he was in Oakland, and he just needed to be on great teams to motivate him. And when he wasn't motivated, he was a below-average receiver. So you say, wow, you've got this God-given gift of being tall and fast and talented.
Athletic
and ability
and good
to
hands.
Jump and athletic and great yeah. hands and everything you want. It's like weird science. If you were to build a receiver, you'd build Randy Moss. Again, until Calvin came along, you'd build
right.
Randy Moss. And then you just somehow, you just either weren't self-motivated enough or I don't know, contract issues, money issues, but if he had Jerry Rice's work ethic and his heart, then Randy would be, you know, by
oh
far
gosh.
The GOAT.
Yeah. You know what's fascinating when we think about Randy Moss, though, to me? Also, I like to throw in the T.O. factor, because one thing that I like about Terrell Owens, and maybe, you know, you always say he didn't have great hands, and he did have a lot of drops, but T.O. could go deep, take the top off the defense, extend the field. He goes across the middle. He does curls. He does slants. T.O. did everything, took the hits. That's the one thing I think about T.O. that I like a little bit more than Randy. Randy was pretty much post and straight, you know, flies, you know. And so to me that, you know, I'm not saying that T.O. is better than Moss, but that's one thing that I would give T.O. the edge over him in that type of situation, you know.
Seven route, nine route, he just go. Although
yeah.
The one thing I'll say, you're absolutely right about T.O. The one thing I'll say about Randy Moss is that defenses, he was in that elite group that arguably, you could argue they didn't even do this for Jerry Rice to some degree, because San Francisco had so many other tools during those years, right? They had
right.
you know, other receivers and running backs and whatever. He was like Lawrence Taylor in the sense that, or you know, Bruce Smith or you know, Reggie White, you knew on every single play where Randy Moss was. You had to, because if you didn't, you'd get burned. And even Jerry Rice, as great as he was, you weren't scared. Jerry Rice would kill you with 3-4, you know, he would even flash you, 3-4 receptions on the drive. Randy Moss kill you with a 75-yard bomb. So you need to know. You needed to know at all times, or still do. I mean, I guess he's still playing.
Well, he's the most explosive. He might be the most explosive receiver of all time, and you feared Randy Moss. I mean, that's true. And that's why people respect him. And young kids and young wide receivers and defensive backs, they were like, "Yo, you got mossed." And that's the type of respect that, you know, hey, listen, that you're gonna get all through, you know, the times, you know, of all these athletes, and it's incredible. And I think, you know, we could segue into this. That's the same type of respect that these linebackers, you know, they all pay homage and give the utmost respect to Ray Lewis, because he's one of the best that ever did it, and he wasn't selfish. He came back in a sense that even the Pro Bowls or whatever, he talked to these guys, he taught them. He, you know, said, look at my mistakes, look at my troubles, and, you know, look at the Ravens team. Nobody gets in trouble on that team. So we got this story about the Ravens.
Yeah, what's going on with that? So break it down for us with this PED.
I got to say this. I've never taken deer antler velvet spray, and I've never seen it, and, you know, I've had a cortisone shot in my foot and my hand, and they hurt like heck, and the one in the foot helped and the one in the hand didn't. So, and we'll see about my knee as my arthritis gets worse. But I'll just say this. This, I'm surprised Sports Illustrated did this, and I think that this guy who's got like four lawsuits on him, I kind of think he's just fishing for fame. His company is about you know, medicines that don't have, or supplements that don't have any steroids or anything in it. So, you know, that's sort of his whole spiel, and he, you know, he's a businessman too. I just think it's kind of sad. Look, we all know Ray has been 17 years. He's never failed a test. They get random tested in the NFL. There's guys in the last 5 years, you know, all positions who have come up, you know, failed, and, you know, they only get suspended for 4 games. So we could question the NFL's policy a little bit. But as far as we know, Ray Lewis has been clean. So I just think it's kind of sad that in this time where he's, you know, he's ending, and it's such a positive that somebody just tries to put such a negative, you know, on it and on him, you know. So I don't believe the story at all. And even though they say they might have something taped where he inquired about it, someone asking about it and then someone getting it and using it are two different things. So to me, I think it's a non-issue, and obviously the NFL does too, because there's been no whiff, you know, no stuff about it. There's the NFL coming out and saying anything. So.
Yeah, you saw how he shut it down at the pro day yesterday.
You know, listen, Ray did the right thing. He spoke, you know, he said no, never, but he, you know, addressed it, and I think his coach handled it well, you know. And, you know, to me, let's talk about the game, you know. But real quick, before we talk about that, we didn't mention this in our breaking news. What are your thoughts? What do you think about the Miami Herald and the story and the stuff with A-Rod, man? I mean, you think the Yankees should try to get their money back or – get rid of this contract, or what do you think is going on with A-Rod?
Well, it's very difficult to get rid of the guy's contract because they didn't do it in 2009 when he admitted to it. So they didn't do it in 2009. They win a World Series, and now 2-3 years later, they have less of a ground to stand on to say, let's get rid of him because of, you know, whatever, misrepresenting and using a banned substance. So the CBA and baseball is probably too strong for them to get rid of, you know, his contract if, in fact, it's found that he was in violation or that he misrepresented himself to the, you know, to the Yankees. Oh, I just can't wait for this to be over with. I just can't wait for this whole era to be done with.
But, you know, honestly, do you think will it ever end? And maybe, you know, listen, I've talked to so many people who are just like, you know what, they just don't care. Let them all do stuff. Who cares? I don't feel that way personally, but I know a lot of people, Ray, who are just like, I don't care if it's football, basketball, baseball, boxing, bowling. If they want to use something, just let them use. We, you know, we're fans. We just want to see great athletes and great stats.
Imagine if they started using PEDs in bowling. Like, they just blow the pins up.
Can you imagine?
Like, what?
So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with A-Rod. I think it's just, I get tired of these stories. But, you know, let's talk about on the field. Let's talk about people that get no love. Let's talk about the kickers. David Akers, he's been in the Super Bowl. He lost with the Eagles. Jason Tucker's a rookie. Who are you more concerned about in the Super Bowl? We'll start looking at different positions, but let's start with the kickers.
Well, that's interesting because David Akers, several times this year,
missed a lot of kicks.
Lost his job.
Yeah.
And so if you look at it, he had a Pro Bowl year, and he was considered one of the best kickers in the game when
last
he
season,
was
yeah.
in Philly. And then last
no, no,
season,
his last year, his last season in the 49ers.
No, I understand. He set
a
record, yeah, for
yeah.
the Niners last year. But I'm saying even dating back to his days in Philly,
oh, yeah.
he was
respected.
He was
and
the
good.
Man. And then,
yeah, and he was
and
clutch.
What, exactly. He was. That was my other point. Not only was he great, but he made some big clutch kicks. So what happened to him? I mean, is this a physical thing? Is he injured? Is his foot not right? Is his
well, they
shoulder
said,
not?
No,
I mean,
they said something. He had an abdominal strain, remember? So
I heard
think,
that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Right now, though, if it comes down to a field goal or two, you got to favor the Ravens. This
and
Tucker
so
kid,
how many times would
kicking.
You say you favor a rookie kicker versus you favor, you know, a multiple-time Pro Bowler?
Yeah.
But you might be right.
No, definitely.
You might be right. David Akers is, you know, he is not, he's not had a great season and wants to say that he'll turn it around in the Super Bowl when the pressure is on. The guy has missed 13 field goals. You know, he's 29 for 42. He missed 13 field goals. That's
that
amazing.
Is a lot. It is amazing. And to me, it affects your whole special teams. You know, if you're on a 33-yard line, it's 4th-and-3, 4th-and-4, maybe you're like, this is kind of far. I think I might have to go for it, you know? And that's a situation that could it's very plausible for the game. Could definitely come up. So let me ask you this, right? We'll kind of bounce around, you know. When you look at the running backs, you got Rice and Pierce. I mean, just studs. And then you got a bunch of studs over here with, you know, Gore, Michael James. Obviously, Kaepernick is now in that category. We can't put him there. But
sure.
Gore and Michael James. Right. Well, Ken Hunter, yeah, unfortunately, he got hurt. But, you know, Anthony Dixon's still there, Gore and Michael James. Now, Gore, you know, he had his 1,200 yards for the season, you know, and he was a beast. But I think they rested him a little bit. And Ray Rice, you know, he had his 1,100 and change yards for the season. But when you come down to it, do you think the threat of Kaepernick and a pistol, does it give Gore a little bit of an edge over Rice and Pierce?
I think it does. I think what happens is not only Kaepernick and what he can do, but the fact that LaMichael James, who I
yeah.
really like coming out of Oregon, is a compliment to Frank Gore. They have everything. You know what I mean? They have the big bruiser who can, I mean,
right.
Frank Gore's not that big, but he definitely runs between the tackles. So he can
right.
run upfield. And then you have LaMichael James who can break it outside. So if you had to choose one running back, the best running back on the field is Ray Rice by far. Pride of New
yeah.
Rochelle by way of Rutgers. So Ray Rice
kid.
Best running back on the field for sure. But the best running attack is definitely the Niners have an advantage there between Kaepernick and Gore and LaMichael James. And you throw in Anthony Dixon, they've got the better.
Hey,
collection.
But I got to throw a little X factor at you, a little curveball. Remember, I spoke about them in you know about the during the season and even the Colts game and the Broncos game. I like Bernard Pierce. I think he extends Ray Rice's career, and I think they got a 1-2 punch that is deadly. I mean, he had 108 carries this year, and Pierce had and Ray Rice had 257. So he's getting his touches. And what I like about this kid, he actually – now, Ray Rice is better at the screens, but I think Pierce, this kid's kind of explosive. When you see him get the ball, he's gone. I think Pierce can be a difference maker in this game, man. 4.9 yards a carry for the season. That's impressive, and that's the best of any running back for any team in this game. So don't sleep on Pierce. So
Yeah.
Let's look at this.
I got you. Look, the X factor might just be the quarterbacks, right? The fact that you get nothing out of Flacco from the running game, which, you know, you don't expect to. He's got that cannon of an arm, and he'll beat you with his arm.
Hey, but listen, if he's got to scramble for 9, 11 yards, Flacco, he can run a little bit if he has to. You know, if it's forced to, he's not a complete – look, he's not as slow as Brady or Manning.
He's not Dan Marino.
Say that. Right. Oh, poor Dan with those knees. So let's go to tight end. Obviously, you got Davis, Yo Terps, and Delanie Walker. Very, very nice tandem, right? And then you got Pitta and Dixon. Now, that might not sound so impressive, but you got to say Pitta stepped it up, huh?
I tell you what, I like Pitta and Dixon. You know why? I may even like them better because they're more consistent. They're more consistent. They move the ball, and they consistently show up. We should look at the game logs because we had a couple times this year put out an MIA for your boy Vernon Davis. Maybe he was filming some more Under Armour commercials or he was
doing stuff back
at Maryland.
Double-teamed a lot. He was double-teamed a lot, and they're blocking him on the line, and then he was running, you know, more posts and straight down the middle. I think where Vernon Davis is dangerous is when he's on slants and he's doing down-it-ins and down-it-outs because you can't stick with him. And I think I'd put Vernon Davis sometimes, I'd put him in a slot. If I go two tight ends, to me, I'd throw Vernon Davis in the slot a little bit and mix it up. That's where he's really dangerous.
Because he is the most talented player on that team. I mean, he and Kaepernick are the two most talented players on the San Francisco 49ers. So even though Gore is your veteran and your workhorse and Randy Moss might be the second best receiver of all time, he's not in on every play, this kid is your most complete, athletic, just killer weapon. So you better find a way to get him the ball. You would hate to see the Niners, and we'll get into our prediction next week, next episode on Friday.
Yeah.
You would hate to see the Niners lose and not get the ball to Vernon Davis 10 times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd hate to leave those bullets in my holster. So you definitely need to see more of Vernon Davis, in my opinion.
Right. And I think obviously, and we'll get to receivers next, but I think also, you know, Crabtree is up there with Vernon Davis, though, now. He's starting to be that real number one receiver that, you know, we thought he would be. It's a shame that Mario Manningham, you know, was out for the season because he has the experience of just being there last year and making his clutch catch. But also, he's just the type of receiver that could really help them in this type of game.
Think about this. The Niners, wait, just on that point, just a sec, a quick one. Think about how we thought the Niners would have an explosive offense with the addition of Randy Moss, who they've gotten a little bit out of.
Right, 28 receptions. Yeah.
Jacobs.
Yep, Jacobs, who did nothing.
And Mario Manningham. So they're in the Super Bowl where they got virtually nothing from Jacobs and Manningham and a little bit from Randy Moss and LaMichael James from Oregon. So from those four guys who we thought, wow, that's going to propel their offense and get them over the hump, they get virtually nothing collectively from the four of them versus what we thought. But Kaepernick, you know, makes up for some of that difference in that pistol offense. So think about how more explosive and how much better they could have been potentially with all of those guys healthy and contributing.
It's fascinating. And, you know, look, Alex Smith, 6-2-1, and now Kaepernick, 7-2. So, I mean, I think it's comparable, and Alex Smith was playing great. And I just think that what Kaepernick has done is just taken it to a whole nother level. And I think, you know, kudos to Harbaugh for sort of knowing that, seeing that, trusting it, and believing in it. And then Kaepernick, he took what he was doing in practice. They said he was a beast in practice. And then he took it and ran with it on the field and took it to a whole nother level. You know, and I just think even maybe more so than RG3, people are saying on the field, they're surprised and blown away about how fast Kaepernick really is. Now, we don't know if he runs a 4.5, 4.4, you know, maybe he's not a 4.3, but whatever it is, he's on that field, you know, cats aren't even touching him.
I think because he's long, people look at him like, wow, I didn't realize a big man like that could move so fast.
He's like 6'4.5", right? He's a big boy. So let's look at these receivers, man. Torrey Smith, another Yoturf, Anquan Boldin, Jacoby Jones, kind of nice for Baltimore, those guys. And then, you know, the veteran, Randy Moss with Crabtree. And who's their third? Ted Ginn Jr.
Teddy Ginn Jr.
Yeah, so I don't know. This is – I'd have to give Baltimore the edge here in receivers. Even though Crabtree's been stepping – the best hands go to Anquan Boldin out of this whole crew, I think, without a doubt.
And makes tough catches, and he makes first downs.
Yeah. But I just think Torrey Smith's improved so much. So
yeah.
Is Crabtree, right? But Torrey, really, this season has just taken it to a whole nother level.
He has. And, you know, Crabtree and Moss are essentially all they get from their, you know, from their wideouts. Right, they get some from Davis, they get some from Delanie Walker, LaMichael James. Teddy Ginn really hasn't done anything in the playoffs.
Right.
So it really comes down to two wide receivers because they go with the, you know, the fullback and the tight end, the old school pro set, or now the pistol set, I guess. So it comes down to, would you rather have, so this is the question, would you rather have Michael Crabtree and Randy Moss or, you know, your boys over in Boldin?
Smith and Boldin.
Torrey Smith and Anquan Boldin.
That could be almost a toss-up. It really could. Because it just depends, like, you know, which Randy. And we don't know. I got to tell you this. In the first two possessions for the Niners, they've got to go for one. They got to try to throw a 50-yard bomb to Randy Moss. Whether it works or not, it doesn't matter. It does matter. It could change the whole game, right? And change their defense and move the safety. But I think you've got to test it and you've got to stretch the field and sort of, you know, show the fact that, hey, this could be something you have to worry about the entire game. I could fake it to Gore, step back, and throw 50 yards down the field to Randy Moss for 6 points. That's something that could be a real threat in this game.
Yeah,
you know?
I would say to the Ravens, don't fall behind, because if they go down 10 points, I don't think they can recover from that. So, to me, the Ravens have to keep the game close, and if the Niners can get a couple of long bombs, a couple of deep, you know, either fly or seam routes or something up the middle, stretch the safeties, move the chain, and score some touchdowns, Baltimore's in for a long game.
Yeah.
So,
and you know Flacco's going to try to do the same with Torrey Smith and Jacoby Jones. He'll try to stretch it out, too.
He'll try to, but the Niners' D is – bit better or at least younger than the Baltimore D, and I don't know that they're going to give up those deep plays. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. Hey, listen, I think it's about that time.
I know. I was going to say, we'll do the quarterbacks and the defense and our predictions and everything on Friday, but let's go to our segment. Where are you at?
So it's
Ray.
Wednesday.
Who's our guy?
We have our segment, Where Are You At Wednesday. And we said a lot of names today. So one of those names that we mentioned, and maybe on Friday we'll give maybe our preview for Super Bowl MVP. But
yes,
on this Wednesday, we're going to take a look at a former NFL Super Bowl MVP, a two-time Pro Bowler running back. Now, if you love football and you loved football in the 80s, you knew this guy. His name was Otis Jerome, better known as O.J. Anderson. O.J. Now, if you really remember,
a lifetime
he
Cardinal.
Did his big damage with the Cardinals. And that's when the Cardinals were the St. Louis Cardinals. So they had the baseball Cardinals and they had the football Cardinals.
Yeah.
And they had Neil Lomax and Roy Green.
Yeah, they made the playoffs in 82, remember? 1982. I remember they were in the playoffs.
Yeah, so O.J. Anderson went to the U, went to Miami of Florida with Shem Beckler back in the days. Not Shem Beckler, I'm sorry, with what's the guy's name?
I know who you're talking about.
Not Shem. Oh, God.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he went to the U. And he graduated in 79. He was the eighth pick in the first round by the St. Louis Cardinals, the St. Louis football Cardinals. And he played until 86 with the Cardinals when he was traded to the Giants in 86. And he's still He left as the Cardinals' leading rusher at 1 yard less than 8,000, so 7,999 yards. Then he gets traded to the Giants. We'll get into his Giant career in a sec. But he comes out, and as a rookie, in his first game as a rookie, runs for 193 yards. He says to himself, wow, we got somebody.
Oh, yeah,
so he was the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. He rushes for 1,600 yards that season. He goes to his first two Pro Bowls and his only two Pro Bowls in his first 2 years. In 79
and he wasn't
and
a speedster. This is a big
no,
bat
he wasn't.
For people who don't remember.
He was definitely a big boy. And then he gets traded middle of the 86 season to the Giants. And then he plays with the Giants from 86 to 92. And he didn't do as much work for the Giants, right? He only rushed for 2,200 yards in those 6 seasons. But here's some interesting stats. He carried the ball 739 times. He touched the ball 739 times. He only fumbled 3 times. So in 6 years, he only fumbled 3 times. He was reliable.
And Parcells loved him for that.
Parcells loved him because Parcells was a ball control, no turnover kind of guy. And he went to 2 Super Bowls. He didn't do much in 86. He only rushed for 7 yards, although he did score 1 touchdown against the Broncos in that Super Bowl in 86. But in Super Bowl 90, our boy, Otis, O.J. Anderson, rushed 21 times for 100 yards and scores a touchdown, and he's the Super Bowl 25 MVP. That's Super Bowl 1990 when they beat the Buffalo Bills, Scott Norwood,
the field
wide
goal.
Right.
Wide right.
20-19, the 1-point Super Bowl. So O.J. Anderson was the Super Bowl MVP. So in his NFL
career,
14-year NFL career, rushed for 10,273 yards, 4 yards a carry, 86 touchdowns, and a
pretty impressive
Super Bowl winner and a Super Bowl MVP in 1990, or the 1990 season. It was the 91.
Right.
Super Bowl was technically in 91. So, yeah, so tell us, Tay, what do you remember? What are your memories of O.J.?
I got to say, the one thing that I always loved about O.J. Anderson, and I remember his Cardinal years, I remember having his football card, you know, and you mentioned him and Neil Lomax and Roy Green. And I just remember, number one, he used to kill the Giants. And people don't know, the St. Louis Cardinals were in the NFC East. So imagine that, ladies and gentlemen. And he used to run heavy on the Giants, the Redskins. First of all, people used to have to gang tackle him. Yeah, the Cowboys. He was one of those guys where he didn't go down with the first hit. He wasn't a big bruiser, but sometimes it's so funny. You could just see him, you know, like he would for some reason have these long runs because he'd like hit one guy, hit a guy. You know, he sort of had that Earl Campbell in him where he just really wouldn't go down. Very solid, you know, wasn't a great receiver out of the backfield. Every once in a while catch a couple of screen passes. But he would just run up the middle. He did a lot of off tackles, and he was just solid. I think, you know, obviously the 86, I believe it was Joe Morris who was our main running back in 86, right?
Yeah.
And then in the 90 team, he really carried us through the playoffs, and he just solidified the running game. And really, you know, in that Super Bowl, people might remember that Jeff Hostetler, you know, had to take the reins after Phil Simms got hurt. And, you know, Otis was a very big key to that, you know, play action pass from Otis and then –
the reason the Giants won that Super Bowl was time of possession. The Giants had double the possession of the Baltimore.
And kept that explosive Bills offense off the field.
Exactly. Kept that Kelly, Reed, Thomas offense off the field. So that's the only way they could have won that game. The Buffalo Bills were the best.
It was a great strategy. And you know what? Bruce Smith and the Bills defensive line, they could not get O.J. down. I mean, he just possession and just ate it up. So I think it's a great way to, you know, get us ready for the Super Bowl. We wanted to give you an MVP, someone that, you know, you might not know, you might not remember, but O.J., he's not Arnthel James, it's Otis Jerome.
Rome.
Yeah, for Giant fans, he's near and dear to our hearts, man. That was, you know, listen, 79 to 93, nice 14-year career, and, you know, the stats you said, he was solid. You know, definitely a solid guy.
You know, he rushed for 1,000 yards in each of his first 6 seasons, the only exception being the 82 strike shortened season, which he would have gotten to 1,000, but there just weren't enough games.
Right.
So this guy started his career, and he was the man. I mean, in his first 6 seasons, he rushed for 8,000 yards. So he really took, you know, he really took the league by storm, and then eventually slowed down. But the great thing about it is, right at the end of his career, when he was, you know, in his 12th year, he goes out and he's the cornerstone of a Giants offense that possesses the ball for 40 minutes and wins the Super Bowl. So
no,
that's
great,
great
story,
to
man.
See a guy at the end of his career
great
be relied
veteran.
On like that and deliver.
Yeah. So that's our Where You At, O.J. Anderson, Cardinals and Giants and Super Bowl MVP. So listen, let's take a quick break, and we are going to end the show with some great NBA talk. We got some big games tonight. We'll be right back. Ray and Tay. Yeah.
We're back, and we're back to talk some NBA. So let's hoop it up, Tay. What you got?
Well,
I know you're
listen,
going to the
I'm
game
hyped
tonight.
Up. I'm hyped
Lakers
up. Lakers Suns, me and my son, Elijah, will be in the building. I'm hyped up. Listen, look for us on ESPN at 10:30. Elijah's going to have his sign. Nash eclipses the Suns. So look for that. Maybe you'll see us on TV with the sign, you know. And I got to tell you, nice win last night for the Lakers, beating New Orleans. This is 3 in a row, Ray. I think Kobe, the shooting guard slash point guard, I think he's finally realized, you know what, I've got to be more a facilitator. I got to get Gasol, right, because Gasol had, like, what, 5 assists in the first half. Get Gasol the ball in the post. He could throw it to Howard or kick it out to Nash and Meta World Peace for jumpers. And the offense is just really flowing because they're playing team ball. They're sharing it. Dwight Howard's looking better. I think the Lakers might have found, you know, their little bit of magic. So I'm excited for them and for a good game tonight, you know.
Well, it's always interesting to see when the Golden Child comes back home. And
oh, yeah.
Steve Nash is definitely the Golden Child in Phoenix. You know, he had 2 stints. He went in the middle to the Mavs, but he came back. And this is where he ultimately would love to stay. And he's kind of a rental player for the Lakers. I don't think he really feels like he's a Laker at heart. I think he feels, if you were to ask him, he feels like he's a Phoenix Sun in his heart. So it'd be nice to see that the fans, I'm sure the fans will give him a nice warm ovation. And
oh, definitely.
Will obviously enjoy his magic on the court. And you know what's interesting is give Kobe and Steve Nash some credit, right? Steve Nash is physically limited on defense, right? He's never been a good defender, and obviously now at his, you know, age 39, he's not going to be a great defender if he wasn't a great defender at 29.
Right.
But think about how these two have just kind of on the fly changed roles. Steve Nash has always been a great shooter, and now Kobe's saying, well, you know what? At 6'6", I'll draw the attention to me. And I'll be the point guard slash facilitator. And you, the great shooter that you are, you know, obviously you're still a point guard first, but, you know, shoot more. Shoot more. Change your stripes a little bit. Become more offensive-oriented. And I'll have 14, 14, and 11 assists the last 3 games. So really nice to see guys, you know, deep in their career being
work it out.
Open-minded enough and talented enough, frankly, to do things that they're – usually don't do in a game. So real interesting to see that. So this is going to be a nice game. I want to see if LA can win a back-to-back, can win their 4th in a row. They should. They're a better team than Phoenix, and we'll see. We got some other, you know, interesting matchups. We got our Knicks. Orlando is coming to the Garden to play the Knicks.
Yeah.
We got Miami on national TV playing Brooklyn.
Right, the ESPN doubleheader, right. The Heat and that.
Yep.
I think that's going to be interesting because I want to see, like, you know, Lopez, gets announced to the All-Star team, but I want to see, can he be the difference? Can their size, you know, and the Heat saying that they want to get more touches to Chris Bosh, But can the Nets sort of use Blatch and Lopez and their size to take advantage of the Heat, who's probably one of the, I think they're second to last worst rebounding teams in the NBA. So this is what Brooklyn's got to do, and you need D. Will and Joe Johnson to really, you know, step up, and they got to bang and try to out-physical the Miami Heat. So ESPN's got, oh, man. I mean, ESPN's just the best, right? But they treat us to two great games tonight, so it should really be exciting for fans to watch the national games. Obviously, locally, the Knicks have got a nice little five-game homestand, so you're hoping they take care of the Magic, who, you know, seem to play them pretty well the last two times they played down in Orlando. But, you know, it's going to be a good night in the association.
You got Chicago. Milwaukee's a pretty good matchup in the Central. You know, we want to see if Milwaukee's really a playoff team, and Chicago's obviously doing great even without D. Rose. Third, you know, took over that number three slot in the Eastern Conference. So we got some good basketball tonight.
Yeah, and the Lakers are trying to move up. I mean, they're right on the heels now, you know, trying to catch up to Portland. They're in the 10th spot, and, you know, they're still, you know, two or three games behind Portland. So they're trying to see if they can, you know, keep it going and get into that position where they can.
Three behind Portland and four games behind Utah and Houston.
Right.
And I tell you what, behind closed doors, obviously the Lakers are going to say the politically correct thing outside of closed doors. But you can't tell me that behind closed doors, Kobe, Dwight Howard, Paul Gasol, Meta World, FKA, Ron Artest, and Steve Nash are not saying to themselves, you know what, we're better than Portland.
We're better than Houston.
We're better than Utah.
Blake is back. Don't forget Steve Blake. Yo, Terps, Steve Blake is back, and he's important, a good backup point guard and a shooter and another ball handler for the Lakers. So that's, you know, that's a good thing too.
Yeah, and by the way, quiet as kept, before we forget, San Antonio has in the last couple of weeks very quietly slid past Oklahoma City, and now they're the number one seed in the Western Conference, best record
tied
in the
NBA. The loss column, right?
36-11. Tied in the loss column, but two more wins. So
that's impressive.
I tell you what, man, if they can translate that just one more time and get Timmy a fifth ring, that'd be something. That'd be something. But again, the youth movement usually
hits
into
the
playoffs.
It's really hard, I think. I just think when it comes down to it, it's more on Parker. You know, I mean, obviously he needs help, and he's got Duane Blair. You know what? The Spurs need to make a move. Because to me, Tiago Splitter and Blair, I don't think in the playoffs going up against
Boris
OKC.
Don't forget Boris.
Oh, yeah, but no, Dio, that's right. He came last year, and him and Steven Jackson are there, and they're there for a full season. So I guess the question is, will that be a difference compared to them just getting there last year for the playoff run? They're there for a full season. But Dio is kind of like a 3-4, you know, in the West. Sometimes he plays a little fast five, but I just wonder if they could use one more big guy, because even the Red Bomber, Bonner, he's not a banger. He shoots threes. I would like to see them try to really, if they could get Odin and he could give them anything, that could be a difference maker.
They need Ed Davis.
That's
a team right there that could use an Ed Davis. They need an athlete, a wing athlete, although Kawhi Leonard has been playing really well. And Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, Manu Ginobili are doing okay. It's just that when they played Oklahoma City, they were up 2-0, and they were up in that third game, and then you just saw the wheels come off, the youth movement. And it happened to them the year before against the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies were just, from the beginning of game one, the Grizzlies were just that young stud team that they couldn't deal with. So one team was killing them with youth and size, and one team was just killing them with youth and wing, you know, athletes. So either way, they lost in back-to-back playoffs. So I'm really interested to see how this San Antonio team parlays what they've been doing into the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, the NBA keeps heating up. There'll be some great games tonight. I'm just excited, man. Friday, a big show, the Ray and Tay Awards. We'll talk about the Hall of Famers. We're going to give our prediction of the Super Bowl 47 between the Niners and Ravens. And listen, I'll let you know what's going
on. On Friday. Come in and join us.
Yeah, I'm going to let you know what's going on in the arena tonight, man, the Lakers Suns.
So, yeah, let us know. Tweet us out or do something. Let us know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll take plenty of pictures and stuff. So check us out also at rayandtaytoday.com, and you can see all of our great pictures from our events that we go to. So, all right, another great show, man. Thanks for checking
us
out.
Thanks for hanging with us.
And thanks for talking sports with friends, Ray and Tay Today. Peace.
Enough stepping me awkward. I pop left me open. My pop left me open. My mama wasn't home. Do not step in me awkward. I pop left me open. My pop left me open. My mama wasn't home. Do not step in me awkward. I pop left me open. My pop left me open. My mama wasn't home. Do not step in me awkward. I pop left me open. My pop left me open. My mama wasn't
what?
Home. Yeah, mama wasn't home, but he complete had to just stand on his own. Come on, son, I spit it off the dome, and I want you to know my life was born in Chrome. Yeah, moms were shot, and pops was already gone, so I had it going on. It was just me and my sister B. I took care of myself, and that's how it went down B. An early young man with a crazy ill plan. And don't you understand, I had the world in my hands. It's granted, goddamn it, you really could.